What is up, all you addicts out there? Welcome to the Addicted Fishing Podcast. Today I'm going to introduce everyone because last time I let them introduce themselves and they got all butthurt about it. So we have Cameron Black, Josh Handy, and Nick Popoff in the studio with us tonight. You guys got all uncomfortable last time I made you introduce yourselves.
Nah, we're just terrible at it. That's why we have you, Marlon.
That's why we fish.
Hey, if you guys are watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button and give us some suggestions. I've seen there's some suggestions, Sean. I don't know if you've been reading the comments, but they were talking about how it'd be cool to cut to different pictures of the products that we're using when we're talking about them, or scenes of us like steelhead fishing or whatever when we're talking about certain subjects, like when they're watching the podcast on YouTube. So thanks for those suggestions, everyone, and we will try to start doing some of those as we continue to make these podcasts for sure.
Yeah, we've got some of the products up here on the table, and actually this is kind of funny, we are going to be talking about products, but I don't know if we're prepared to do all of that tonight.
Yeah,
but
no, I don't think we're going to talk about all the products. Yeah,
well, I mean, I'm just saying get them on display and stuff.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah,
YouTubers,
yeah.
But I think that's a good idea, though.
We'll definitely work it in for you guys out there watching for sure. So, and actually, you know, funny thing about YouTube, and like I said, you guys watch it, is that we're actually, tonight's topic is brought to you by a YouTube suggestion that was on our first YouTube live encounter that we just pulled out of our butts today and decided to give it a try. So we are going to be talking about products that we use for winter steelheading, and we're going to really try to break down like why, what, and everything from jigs to floats to rods to reels, waders, boots. I don't know what we're going to go.
Talk about all the different gear. We've had these questions actually a bunch of times in podcasts before too. People want to know more into the gear that we're using and what we're using. So. And we'll make sure that we put links in the descriptions to all this stuff. So if you guys want to buy it or you guys want to check it out, you can look into it deeper on the things we're talking about. So first of all, let's talk some rods. How about that?
Why?
What's your favorite rod?
My favorite rod?
On the planet right now.
Oh, boy. Favorite rod on the planet. You kind of spurred this one on me. Think about that for a minute.
I thought you were instantly going to say the 9-9.
Yeah, I mean, is it my favorite?
Yeah, it's like your go-to.
Well, of course it's a go-to. It's the best.
Are you talking steelhead rod?
It's probably the best.
Yeah, that's the problem. When you say favorite rod, it's like, well, are you talking steelhead, salmon, bass, trout?
I was going to debate about that 9-2 spoon rod, though.
That's a sick rod.
It's a pretty, like, I was going to say that. But then I was also thinking, okay, I also have a 10.5 foot 8-12 that we're testing, and that's playing with, too.
That's something I'm interested in. But no, overall rod, 12 footer. I fished that for the first time.
Oh, you're talking the guy.
I'm
the
just saying,
over, that's for salmon.
Well, that's what I was telling. That's why I asked. Clarify.
Do you like that rod?
I love it.
Good.
Yeah, I bought a couple. So I think we're gonna kick. Let's do that. Let's stick this. Keep it steelhead. Yep, so we'll keep steelhead. This on steelhead gear. So we're just gonna, since we're kind of in the middle of the season, we're gonna talk just steelhead. So we'll kind of draw the line so Nick doesn't get to throw his 12 footer in there. So.
Yeah, I love it.
but going back to that 9-9, yeah, dude. So bottom line, Guide Select Pro Akuma 9-9. That is the route that I literally will carry 6 to 8 of those in the raft.
Yep.
Best float fishing rod I have fished.
Super all around.
It's a very, the action on it's right. Like people attribute, you know, good bobber rods to length. Like, oh, it's just because it's long. It's like, that's fine. You can say, oh, yeah, it's long, cool. But a lot of bobber fishing has to do with the action.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You need a fast action rod. You don't want something that when you go freaking swinging, that the rod's just like a noodle and just gives to the fish. Because generally in a lot of float fishing, you need to have a lot of line take up. You know, you need to be able to pick up that line off the water. And then you also have the distance of the bobber going down to the fish. Like, you need to have some... You need to have some oomph to set the hook there. Yeah. So no, it's not the softest action rod out there, but the fast action rod is what makes it what it is. So like I said, winter steelhead, no question, that 9-9.
And that's like a perfect length too. You know, that 9-9 is
especially for you raft guys and drift boat guys.
You can raft, drift boat, bank fit. I mean, you kind of get it all. It's right up in that upper, you know, length.
I took a 10.5 to a small creek the other day, one of the 10.5 Guide Select Pros, and it's, you need a shorter rod when you're fishing a smaller creek. Like 10.5 is just too big.
And you know what the other issue with 10.5 is, and especially for the boat, is you get all the tip wrap, you know. And when you get a tip wrap, you got a guy moving his rod, you know, 10 feet back to unwrap it, and then, you know, it just is, it's a
that
cumbersome
is a pain
rod
for sure.
Well, and then not to mention too, and I'll admit this, because I actually had a 9-9. I've been using them now for 3 years. My third season using them straight through. I broke one last year when I shoved the rod. When we had a fish on, I shoved my rod like up under the frame somehow, and then I stroked and just planted the guy fighting the fish and planted his ass right in the seat.
Oh.
Well, Yeah, broke the rod. I actually had one break last week on a guy trying to free a snag. Way he like reached way up on the eye, and he like, and we were drifting, and he grabbed the rod, and then as like the boat went by, it just boom, and I didn't even know what he was doing. I literally heard it crack.
Oh
I
God!
Flipped my head around, and he blew it up. I can finally say it: the first time in 3 years, I broke one.
But does that count? Because that's kind of like a faulty break. It was a dumb move.
Yeah. But you know what? Like, as far as like what people, you know, people out there, they say about the, those, dude, solid freaking yeah. rod. I don't care. I should, if any other rod, dude, I've broken a lot of rods in my guide career. And I'll tell you what, like that one, you're right. It probably was that guy's fault. But, dude, something happened. And I don't know. And I, to this day, I'm never going to know how hard he was pulling on it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He tacoed it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. You can break but any rod.
You know? No, yeah, you can
like,
break them.
Yeah, you can break matter. Every rod. But for how many trips I do a freaking year and for how many times, like, just yeah. stupid stuff happens in the raft.
Yep.
Dude, I'm like, I still couldn't be happier. And guess what I'm going to do? Mm-hmm. I'm going to take that rod.
Swap her out.
Have another, swap it out.
That's the best thing about
that. Yeah, I've broke one and it was my fault. Same thing, like in a raft, just lost my footing and fell on it and it broke. And then I lost an eye out of one of them.
Yeah. I've lost, I will say I have lost eyes in what happened, same, almost same situation, a tip wrap on a drive-by, you know, where you know, you're moving by, they point the rod and it pops the eye out because, well, they tip wrapped on moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I get them from, though. It's like, When guys crank down, they reel real fast. They're not watching their gear come out of the water. The bead or the bobber just straight pounds into that, you know, ceramic
gets
piece.
That ceramic tip out of there. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but those guys select pros, dude. I mean, I was pretty hesitant at first a couple years ago when we started using them. And I've loved them.
There's I think we were all kind of skeptical at first. But as we fished them more through that first season, I was really impressed with
I had to tell you guys how to do it. I'm just gonna say it for you, Josh.
I'm still excited for them to put out like a higher end, like really high end model. Like I'm still excited for that.
Yeah,
that'll be cool.
I mean, the rod's damn. I mean, you go pick up the rod on the shelf, especially within that price point.
They're damn nice.
Nothing that.
And they have.
It.
Yep.
They're using
Alps guides on them.
Yeah, I'd say they're using eyes that are on $600 rods.
Yeah.
And so like at the Fuji reel seats that are like the most expensive production one they make. Yep. So, like, the components are there. Mm-hmm. It's a super light rod. I think they could probably get another ounce or two off of it, you know? But even then, it's like...
But there's some other things that could be done, too. Like, there's some balanced things that I would like to do to a couple. Not the whole series, just certain models.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited for them to come out with a higher-end series, too. I ain't going to get rid of my Guide Select Pros, but I'm going to add to it. I'm going to definitely add to it.
I think that's
some
just
nicer models.
They're definitely that workhorse rod. Yeah.
That's kind of your foundation and build from there on it.
Well, then, like I said, go find something, anything relatively compared to that in that price range, and nothing even touches.
Well, their lifetime warranty, too.
And the warranty is so awesome. Where else can you go? You know, you go spend $500 on a rod, and then, you know, something happens like what Cameron just explained, and you're paying to get that rod replaced. And to be able to walk into any store that sells them, explain what happened. You don't got to make up some elaborate story, you know. They just replace it. It's cool.
Well, I was fighting a fish. My first one I've ever caught.
And it broke right here at the reel seat. Snapped in half. I've made up some good stories over the years to get some rods replaced. Real stuff.
Well, and then, too, it's a larger production company.
Yeah.
I mean, so that, I mean, there's disadvantages to that, but the advantage is that those rods are everywhere and they can be easily replaced without a 2 month, 4 month wait time. I mean, so, you know, there's some other things to look at there.
So what about spoon rods? What are you using? What are you liking for spoon rods?
I like that 9.2.
It's
probably the most perfect spoon rod. I mean, in my opinion, it works great. The action on the rod is perfect for fishing spoons.
I remember I fished it with you the first time I ever fished it, and that thing was pretty sick.
Yeah, I mean, it's got like, I mean, for an, it's still an 8 to 12 rating, correct? But it just, it seems like it's got a
little. What? No,
it's 8 to
17.
8 to 17.
Excuse me. 8 to 17. But even for an 8 to 17, what I was going to say is that it's got a parabolic bend to the rod, but it's got a lot of power.
Loads perfectly.
It loads up. Yeah.
You still get that. You know, when you're,
it's got that perfect tip.
You still have the tip. You still have the nice
tip.
Feel
but then it loads up perfectly when you get a fish on it.
I fished a lot of spoon rods where you go to fish them and you know, as you're working your spoon, you just don't have that tip section to feel what it's doing. And that's important, especially when you're fishing those lighter spoons.
Yep.
You know, it's really important.
That's the number one thing I've seen with a lot of the spoon rods is they make them too heavy.
Yep.
There's not enough action in them.
Yep.
So I mean, that's the same thing that's in the Guide Select Pro
Yep.
They make that. I wish, and hopefully the guys from Okuma are listening, I wish they made a little bit longer one. I'd like a 10 foot, 8 foot to 17
mm-hmm. yeah.
spoon rod.
That'd be
just
perfect.
So I have a little bit more control to keep my lineup off the water, especially for the bank guys. When you're in a boat and you're standing on a raft, not necessarily as much of an issue, but when you're on a bank and you're trying to make those long casts or swing in the lower end of a big river or something.
Yeah, so you almost need like a big water spoon rod and then a little water.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing. So if the guys from Okuma are out there listening, hint, hint, Cooper, we need to talk about a 10 foot spoon rod.
There's another rod too that gets passed up all the time. We don't talk about it much, which is a spinner rod. And that 9 foot, 8 to 17 is probably, in my opinion, one of the best spinner rods I've fished. I mean, I've fished it for obviously coho, but for steelhead even. I mean,
just and we've now taken
it's
a bunch
same
of
thing.
Those
it's the power
two,
that
two
it
trips
has.
To Alaska, which you guys all know, when you travel, your rods do not get handled very well when you're traveling. And we've taken those things to Alaska, fished them for coho and steelhead.
Yeah,
and those spinner rods are those are dope.
They're tough. Hard those to beat that rod.
Yeah, they've nailed a lot of rods in that guy.
I was just going to say, they got a pretty good series of a pretty good spread and you know, everything from twitching all the way up. I mean, it's just a good
even that 10.6, 8 to 17, which is a little bit heavier, but I accidentally took that to Alaska, and I was pleasantly surprised at how I got beat up on
that
rod.
That's my Springer bobber rod.
It works great for steelhead, too.
Yeah,
that's some of the bigger fish.
So, all you guys out there listening, so those are kind of the rods. We're Okuma fans. We work with Okuma and love Okuma, so that's the rods that we fish. But those are the general sizes and poundages that you kind of heard of things that we're using when it comes to spoon fishing, bobber fishing, that kind of stuff. What about drift fishing? Are you doing any drift fishing? Or?
Just a little bit. I mean, honestly, when we do it now, they do make that 9.6, was it the 6 to 12?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple rod. Of those. But if I was going to dedicate a lot more to like summer steelhead side drifting, you know,
they make a lighter one too, I believe, a 9.6, 6 to 10 for side.
That's
drifting.
What I'm talking about. Yeah. I would step down to that if I was just 100% dedicated side drifting.
9.6, 6 to 12 is that
6
what you
to 10. It's
6
real,
to 10.
It's really
that's
light.
What it was.
Super
so lighter
parabolic,
cool.
super light.
Yeah, and it's a perfect for side drifting. It's a soft rod. Like it's meant to load up when you know the bait goes by and you feel the rubber band bite. You know that.
What about you know one thing that they are missing out of that Guide Select Pro series? Do they make any in any of their other models? But like a good plug rod. You guys doing any like plugs
not
from
yet.
The boat? Like
there's some.
I don't, but you could probably. I mean that.
You could run the nines.
Right? Even
I
the
mean
nine, two
the Guide Select Classics.
Work. Yeah,
you could run the nines, but if they made an eight, you'd be in the money.
In the Classics, I think they have a 903.
Yeah.
But I think they want to. We've been talking to shorting it down and trying to go one piece, but we ran into some because we work with Okuma too a lot, guys. So like we're always chirping at them, like, hey, you know, you can make an improvement here. This is what like our fans of like our core group of people are saying, like, hey, you guys could use this. So we've talked about 8 foot, but you run into like a lot of shipping issues, like 8 foot
one piece
classic.
Yeah,
because
it's a one piece is the problem. Yep. So shipping it is just
that's
so,
why you just don't see one piece rods anymore.
So
no one wants to pay for shipping.
Do you think an 8 foot two piece would be like?
I don't. People just don't want to do that. Just for like I said, just the you have the ferrule and you don't get the perfect like
you don't have the same action.
You
not
don't
even
have the
close.
Same action.
No, it's not.
So it's like so you do lose a little bit of that. To me, it's I'm not. I guess as crazy of a plugger as a lot of guys are.
Yeah,
but I mean,
some of those guys get. I mean,
seems like you could make just as good a plug.
Well, I was just saying that.
I think
spoon
you
rod.
Could maybe just soften up the bottom. But guess what? That's what we get to work on.
Yeah,
you know. So maybe we get to work out a little bit of that for.
Yeah.
You know, this year, but I tell you what, so they have a little trouble with that. We've talked about, you know, even 7.5 too, but you definitely aren't going to want that in the Guide Select Pro. You're going to want to see that in your Classics.
Okay. So any of you guys out there listening or watching, what do you guys think for a plug rod? Tell us some suggestions, or if you guys have any suggestions of rods that you can't buy at the store that you would love to buy or want to buy, comment. Let us know. We can try to develop or help other companies out there kind of get in their ear and chap at them.
Or what they use. You know, what do you guys use as a rod? You know, there's a lot of different opinions out there on what different rods to use for what scenario, you know.
Absolutely.
One thing Cam didn't touch on with that 9.9 is that, and I know Popoff does this a lot, that thing is a killer bobber dogging rod. Because just has enough backbone to pick up the line
it's
when you
It's also got
to.
The length, too. I mean, you know, and I would we kind of address that, but like the length on those rods are like, you have to have a longer rod, but, you know, and so that plays into that.
Be able to pick up the line.
You know, you want around a 10-foot rod for that. You get too much longer, you get too much tip wrap, and it becomes a hassle. So it's almost ideal for that.
So what about reels? What kind of reels are you using on those?
I'm so torn because I'm so in love with the RTXs, but like the Inspirers are great. Yeah, the Helioses are great.
I honestly started switching a lot of mine to the Okuma RTX just because it's 6-to-1. It's a faster retrieve, but I talked to some of the guys at Okuma. I actually had a long conversation with them about spinning reels in particular, and I told them that, and I've reiterated that again and again and again, that they need to make some faster retrieves.
Mm-hmm. Especially for
steelhead anglers. Yeah. Because if you're going to buy a steelhead bobber rod, I think you need to buy that RTX.
Yeah.
When those steelhead takes off, especially a summer or a winter, and just rips a bunch of line off, and then you got to try to catch back up because he turns right back at you.
Or when you're running like a four and you're trying to reel in all your line after making a long drift and you feel like you're fishing a center pin.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, the 5-to-1s aren't bad. Like, I've been running the Inspirers on a lot of mine, but you can definitely tell the difference.
Oh, there's no question. So all my twitching and stuff with the RTX versus the Inspirers, and it's like, oh, boy. Yeah. I mean.
You make a long cast, you pay for it.
I do like the faster line retrieve. There's no question.
Yeah.
And another thing to touch on is just the price point on those things. Yeah. Great. I mean, even for like that angler who doesn't fish every day, it's like in the $60-$70 range or something like that.
So we'll put some links into the description to some of these things that we're talking about. The Okuma RTX, that's the reel that I think a lot of us love. The Inspire is a great reel as well. And I know there's a lot of other brands out there that you guys, size-wise though, let people know, like, say they don't want to freaking buy an Okuma.
See, that's one way.
What size reel are you putting on your bobber?
That's one way, like, you know, if you're fishing big water and you're doing long drifts, like, you know, the size of the reel also can make a huge difference. I mean, your speed retrieve.
And balance, too.
Your speed retrieve, you know, is your rotations on the reel, obviously. Uh-huh. But if you have a bigger spool, you know, you're going to be picking up more line. So it's kind of like, but generally I end up running a lot of 30s. I run a lot of, like, smaller stuff, lighter stuff. Even the big water stuff we fish, you know, I don't mind having the smaller reel.
Yeah.
I don't need a 400-yard line capacity.
Yeah, you're throwing 150 yards of line on that.
Jordan always uses the
bigger ones.
So I like the smaller ones, too.
I like the
30s.
Yeah,
30s. The size 30s.
30s and 35s are good.
Like 30s and 35s,
But 35s
is perfect. He always tells me the same thing. What if you get outrun? I'm like, it's 150 yards. If I get outrun, and I need to move my feet.
So Jordan uses the 40s, right?
But 35. He can't fish from the boat. Yeah. A lot in his main fishery.
That's true.
So he can't chase. That's why I've
got to fire up the shoebrews and run down the bank. Yeah.
In the sled or in the raft, I go, if the steelhead gets 100 yards away from me, I did something wrong.
Sorry.
I did.
Someone did.
Yeah. So it's like,
dude, Jordan's told me stories a couple, like last year he's hooked into fish.
No, but.
Destroyed. But
I'm saying I did something wrong because I didn't pull my anchor and go down there. But if he's fishing like on, I've seen the spots he fishes. I mean, shoot.
Yeah,
he can be standing on this rock gravel bar. He hooks a fish and it runs down the rapid and gets around a point. You can't get in the boat and chase it. And you can't walk to it either. So, I could totally see on any given Sunday, I bet an 8-pounder could get wrong on you.
I'm getting in the boat and chasing it, dude.
Well, fair enough, but you can't.
I just won't hold the rod. I'll just like put it in like the underneath the thing and start rowing down.
Just drop it, let
then
the
you're
cork
not fishing.
Float up.
Yeah,
you
know
what I mean? Good luck proving that, like fighting that one in court. You know what I mean?
Stupid rule.
Yeah, I know. That's got to be tough, man.
Gosh.
It changes everything. Because, like, you're going down the river with them, you're like,
oh, that's money. We have to pull over. And we have to row right over it.
Yeah. And it's funny all the different areas that he fishes because he's gotten strategic about it. Because he's got to, like, all right, I'm going to let you off on this rock right here. And I'm like, bro, I ain't fishing from this rock. Like, put me somewhere else. Bro. And he's like, no, this is where you got to fish from. It's the only spot. Fish that little seam right there in front of you.
And you
fish. All right, cool. I got one.
I love this rock.
Come swim over here and net it for me, Jordan.
Yeah.
But I mean, so I can see why he likes the 40s and the 45s, the bigger reels. Because,
makes sense.
It's a little different. So then again, so if you guys are listening out there, you're fishing big water, you know, maybe you might take that.
They got those 35s, which just have a little bit bigger spool. I just didn't like them because I don't feel like they bounce as well as a 30.
Yeah.
You put a big reel on a lighter rod, it gets
super cumbersome. The purpose.
Well, and you know, the thing about steelhead fishing is you always have a rod in your hand. You know, you're not doing a lot of plug fish. You're always casting, and that gets, it's just like, you know, twitching and stuff. You have a heavy rod and a heavy reel. It's going to be heavier in your hand.
It's cumbersome.
It gets old by the end of the day.
Dude, one thing I'm going to say about these reels, too, and it's It's just so weird to me because for years, dude, I bought like the most expensive. Oh,
$200, $250
reels. I mean, I'm talking for years. If it didn't have a $200 price tag on it, I wasn't even looking.
Nah.
Nah, that reel sucks. Like, if it ain't $200, that reel sucks.
Oh, I had that mentality.
So I had that mentality for years. And I'm not even kidding. For years, I had a lot of issues with super expensive reels that I bought. Like, issues, especially in the cold weather for steel. Like, I feel like a lot of those companies don't realize that us anglers are using them in those conditions, so they don't build
14 out.
They don't build the reels to handle it. But I mean, it's all over the place, from gear issues to bail issues to, you know. And dude, I have not. It's really weird to say, but I have not had one. And this isn't lying. Like I'm dead serious. I've not had one freaking Inspira reel break.
Yeah. I haven't burned up a drag. Not one. I haven't had one seize up. I haven't had any issues.
No. It's just so weird to me. Like the Helios, the Inspira, all of them. I've dunked them in the water just like I do with other reels. And And I know you got all the freaking haters out there that think I'm lying about this, but I'm being like, even to myself, like it like weirds me out.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, for years, I'm like, why the F was I buying?
So okay.
Why was $2,000 buying these reels? Exactly.
Real fast though, when you were buying those $250 reels, like how many more fish were you catching?
Zero more.
Just checking.
Maybe. But
last I checked, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't for me. It was never the fish. Like I don't about that. Like I just like to have something nice.
Yeah.
Like I like to be able to fish with a nice gear. I like to be able to know that it's not. And it's like nice.
Yeah. I think that's it.
I have a $60,000 truck. I like nice.
But when you
I work hard to buy it.
But like you said, when you expand out of that like not comfort zone, but when you're like, okay, I'm gonna put down my pride and try something a little bit new, like what you're just saying. It's like, damn, I'm not breaking these, I'm not having problems with them.
Yeah. Exactly. So my
perception
was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was like you can't always base it doesn't mean it's not nice. Like I just said, just because the price tag's different.
Yeah.
Just because it's a low price doesn't mean that it's not a good quality thing. And
between low price and cheap.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Just took trying it. Like, right? So opening up your freaking mind and trying some different stuff.
The biggest testament for me was when we went to Alaska. I took a backup reel. I didn't use it.
I took two backup reels.
I was like, okay, we're maybe burn one up. We never had an issue the whole time.
I had a tub of reels, like literally.
In case.
Just because I thought, well, I also thought.
And that was our first time, fishing hard with them. Like, we were going to catch a ton of fish.
Basically, I brought my whole guide set of reels, and I broke them all down, re-spooled them all super fresh. Like you said, never broke into them.
Oh, they should have ready for the year.
Well, that's what's sweet, too. And it's like, you know those things were getting when we were catching
them. We abused them.
Dragged ripping on them.
Yep.
You can see in the Addicted Alaska video, there's a one shot where the reel's like, and that was like the whole trip.
Yeah. Every 3 minutes.
And the more fish you catch in the day, the harder you fight them, too.
Fun would it be to try to get a trip together with the entire freaking, like, all 25 of us.
Dude, that would be the funnest thing in the world.
Dude, how sick would that be? Like 30 of us. I'm dead serious, dude.
10
like,
drift boats take going over down. A
hole. No, you go to somewhere where you could really split up better. Yeah. Like you'd want to go to a destination where you could split up better, but multiple now I'm getting rivers. Sidetracked, so I ain't going to do that.
No.
Getting way off track. Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Let's podcast 24.
Marlin's dream.
That's right.
I'm in.
I'm in.
I think now you go to something as simple as line.
Yeah, line on the reel.
Because it is super simple, but it's
so we talk something quickly that we though before found. You switch to line. Let's talk casting reel because we didn't talk casting reels at all. So I've been using the Helios just because I like it.
I was so annoyed with that reel at first, and then I realized that their braking system is hidden, and you just give it a little twist and you pop it open and you just flip a couple brakes. I was like, this is the dumbest thing ever. It has one brake. But once I got it dialed in, I'm like, all right, I love this reel.
And you know, it's crazy awesome.
I remember you telling me. So Josh came and he's like, I hate it, dude. You like those reels? I hate them. I'm like,
can't cast with them. I hate them.
I'm like, dude, they're awesome.
Too tight or too loose?
Way too loose. Every time I cast, just
backlash every time he cast. And then he just made one adjustment on it and it was dialed.
Yeah.
Moved a couple out. Reset at 2, which is pretty loose. I mean, I can take a freaking third ounce spoon or 2/3 ounce spoon. Okay. I can put it 100 yards, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they come set pretty loose.
Those things
right
cast
away.
Real good, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're light. And
so
they
after
look...
I opened it up, it was game over.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. And they're super light. They look dope. I mean, I don't.
I love the look.
That's the reels I've been using. Yeah. I like them.
That's really the only casting reel that all of us have probably used,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm using them for drifting and spoon and whatever. I mean, it's on my personal rods for sure.
They have the Citrix as well, but I mean, really, I've just been fishing the Helios.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, they have the Komodo, as well.
But you got one of those.
I got one of those, and it's just a really like insane drag. It's like a 300 stuff. Yeah, it's like a 300. It would be considered like a bigger. So I got it.
That'd be considered the old Marlin.
So now let's talk line.
Let's talk line. I think it's an easy subject.
Yeah.
P line TCB8.
XTCB8.
XTCB8. I always forget about the X, dude. I never
get the acronym right, ever.
I always forget about the X, but...
Like PCTBQR24D...
How many years were we... How many years were we stuck on one brand of line, and I was like, nothing beats this, and then I fished this stuff, and I was blown away, because I fished other braid 8s,
yeah,
and I didn't like them, but this with the Teflon coating is... hard to beat.
And the coating, so I will say the coating lasts long.
That's
I don't know if there's a lot of other brands because some of the coatings on some of these, some of those Teflon coatings on the other brands, dude, it's like two days in, you're like, you can see and it coming off.
You know what's crazy is like some of the other brands, I might say, but like some of the other brands you use, one time getting hung up and your boat's going downstream and it's rubbing those guides, you literally reel in and it's just like, you
see it.
Just like, well, there goes the spool.
There goes the whole
$35 spool line.
Yeah. All the coating.
The only time mine breaks is when Clint cuts it. So
I saw that.
So what line? All you guys out there listening, if you're on iTunes podcasts or what iTunes podcasts? If you're on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever, let us know what line you guys prefer. What pound test are you guys using? I'm typically putting 30 on.
I'm running 30, but I'm gonna try to
run 30 on everything.
Check out the 40.
I take that back. Last year I went to 40. And
that's what I was going to look into, some 40 for solo fishing.
Everyone out there watching, tell Cameron to get off his phone. Comment below and tell him that you hate him for being on his phone.
I just think that 40 might float even a little bit more better with more body on the water.
I switched to 40 last year, and it was probably one of the best decisions I've made. Number one.
Yeah, I just put
30 on. Well, I'm fishing my 30.
It floats better, number one.
Yeah, it has more surface area on the water.
Exactly, so it floats a little bit better, and... dude, you get a lot more stuff back. Like, it's just got a little bit more durability. I mean, even when you're running 30, I don't care who you are, dude, you get hung up on the bottom. Sometimes you lose your 30 and your bobber and everything else.
Yeah, eventually your knots wear.
Yeah, knots are worn, or you your bead sliding up and down is chafing that line or whatever it is, and you break your whole setup off. And it's a big difference.
So I think you told me Brandon Glass used 50 pound. Isn't that
Cody? Cody used 52. Yeah.
Which
difference 40 and 50 in diameter?
The diameter.
It's a 12 versus 10?
10 versus 12,
yeah. It's not that big of a difference, but...
I mean, at the end of the day...
Tell somebody to use 50 for steelhead fish, and they're like, what?
I would
totally... If I felt like it was going to float better and it wasn't going to... I would use it. I'll try it.
Yeah. I think it does float better. I just like that one shot fits right on a reel, no problems.
I was running Top Shots three or four years ago. You know, I was running Top Shots when everybody was all into this Top Shot bobber dogging thing. And when... dude, I'd get hung up, and even though it was 12-pound line, I was snapping my 30, you know, and at the knot, you know. And some of that was the knot I was using, but then I switched to the Alberto, and it still did it. And so, you know, going to that little bit heavier line made a huge difference. And I got rid of the Top Shot. But, you know, I got
and
tired.
And you just threw the Top Shot away.
Yeah, dude, I just got tired of breaking that stuff off. Like, if I'm going fishing for myself, Top Shot's a great idea. I think if you want to be stealthy and, you know, and you got someone, an expert that does this on a daily basis behind the rod, but not for the everyday.
So the 40 stopped it from doing that? Because I have that issue sometimes. Yep. It's just that braid's just so thin, it burns right through the
floral. That's what was happening. Yeah, and I think once you have that knot and there's been tension on it, whether you caught fish or, you know, whatever it is. But like I said, the only time I'm running a Top Shot is when I'm like spoon fishing or, you know, really.
Well, we do it with inlines all the time.
Yeah, or that.
Fixed floats.
Fixed floats.
Yeah,
we're
always running that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the only time I run is if I have fixed floats or I'm running spoon. So, you know, but you guys do a lot of that fixed float fishing, you know, from where you're at and stuff. So it's beneficial for you guys.
We're more elitist than you, Nick.
Yeah, I know. You guys are. Really,
P line, send me some, please.
Let me get some 40.
40 pound.
I need some of that too, P line.
Oh, so the XTCB8. Yep, that's the.
Guys haven't fished it. Check it out.
Check it out. It is money.
I love
for
it.
Sure.
Check it out.
It is money. Then leaders. Let's talk leaders. Let's go start going right down the freaking line. What about leaders? We already know it's fluorocarbon. Why fluorocarbon, though? Why have all of us gone to fluorocarbon where a lot of us used to use monofilaments?
I always used mono before.
I can tell you, just, I mean, we talked about live feed and stuff, but it's gotten so much better. You know, the old fluorocarbon was so terrible. Like, you'd fish
especially
it
in
just,
cold weather.
Oh, cold weather, snap everything every minute. Everything was abrasions and nicks from drifting. And we used to drift fish a lot, you know, a lot of side drifting stuff back in the day. So, you know, your stuff dragging on the bottom. But now it's so much better. It's so much more durable. So much, you know, there's so much more strength in it now than there was. It's game changing, yeah. You know, and you get the visibility factor, you know. It's, I think that it plays a huge role in the fish not being able to see it, you know, to whereas you put a piece of, like, take people, you know, it's a worldwide line that's been used for steelhead fishing, Maximal Ultra Green, you know, you put that in line with some of the SS, dude, it is like, you see the 10-pound leader, you know, the Ultra Green.
Yeah, it's cool. Going right to the knot, and then yes, there's nothing after. You just hold it on the water 6 inches. Yep. And it's pretty incredible.
It's awesome.
It's one single solid line rather than, I think, I remember this from back in the day. It's like actually like the mono is corded almost, so the fish can see light reflection through it versus fluoro. Mm-hmm. Look at that.
Dude, you're such a scientist.
I know, dude. He just went Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Did you know Bill Nye the Science Guy isn't even a real scientist?
Oh, of course, dude.
He's a TV star.
We're not real fishermen.
Gotcha! All you guys out there watching. What were you going to say, Cam?
I just remember one time when I was in college and the whole, like, pink worm thing was going on, and we were fishing summers on a popular river that was just loaded to the brim. Like, every morning you showed up at 4, you stood on your rock with 10 other guys, and we caught our fish. And I remember fluorocarbon when it first came out, and I was like, I'm going to spool my reel with this, and I'm going to catch it. I spooled my whole reel with it.
Fire.
And I went out there, and, like, the first
I lost four, my whole spool.
The first, like, 4 fish I hooked with, like, 10-pound, like, you know, the size mono I was using in another brand in this floor, I broke every single one of them, not even trying. Like, just babying them. Just
hook set.
Tink, tink. Just like, to the point where this will give it away where it's at, but it doesn't happen anymore, so I don't even care. So I literally, like, left the river, left my buddy sitting down there. I left the river. I drove to Pritchard's store, which was still there. Bought a spool of, like, just, you know, what we used back then for model. Spooled the reel, went back down and caught 2 fish. And after that, I was like, this fluorocarbon is freaking garbage.
And then that's what happened, is it got such a bad name for so long.
Oh, it did.
That until they started to, like, turn the corner and develop
it. It's like anything.
It's anything.
Yeah,
I mean, it's any rod. It's
any
reel.
So you guys,
it's any, you know.
SS or tactical?
I'm SS.
SS.
I like either. Yeah, I could go either way.
Particular. And I don't think that's what the issue is. I think it's like, if there's good fluoro, you know, you have good fluoro, you have good fluoro. It doesn't matter if it's, you know.
And most good fluoro comes out of what, like Japan or something like that, right?
Yeah, like out of those, like, what do they call them, Yozuri and all those. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, that's what's big in the bass industry, you know.
Fluoro?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge.
That's literally all I use anymore for leader material.
So the P-Line SS fluorocarbon, guys, we'll put a link in the description so you guys can check it out. P-Line SS fluorocarbon, tactical fluorocarbon, but like Nick and Josh and all these guys are saying, any brand.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's advanced so much. I will say, don't get like the coated, like the ones that are like.
Yeah, clear. I won't say any brand. I mean,
the clear, know. It's the fluoro clear.
Yeah, what's the ones that are like coated? Like,
that's,
it's not an actual.
That's actually one of P-Lines too, is a fluoro clear. Yeah, it's a copolymer.
Which I use that, like, for trout fishing. Just don't use it for.
Yeah.
Steelhead.
When that 20-pounder steelhead's on the line.
Exactly.
I mean, honestly, as advanced as it is now and how much better it is, there's really, in my opinion, no reason to not use fluoro when you're steelhead fishing.
Yeah.
Unless you're pulling plugs or something like that and you want stretch.
I use fluoro for every
But really, they make rods that I have, can soak that up.
And I get, you know, 500 of them tied up before the season. So it's like, you know.
You want to hook me up, dude?
No.
Well, you want to say, like,
you know who I pay?
I need them.
I'm not going to lie. I pay for mine, dude. I don't got time to do that. I pay for mine. It's not the best way to do it, but it saves me a lot of time with my family. 500 liters takes a long time.
Yeah, your fingers too.
Yeah, and then you got to add the arnies and all that other stuff.
500 liters to catch 3 fish, though?
I know, that's tough.
A lot of work. A
lot of snacks.
Oh, you have someone tie them for you.
Yeah. I have a guy tie them for me, which he does a really good job, so I can't complain. You know what? That's kind of a funny story. First time he sent me some, he's like telling me about these new hooks I should try, and first 2 fish I had snapped the hooks in half. I'm like, dude, I just had 350 liters. Remember I told you about this?
And I think I know what hooks those were because I've had the problem with them too. They were like they were supposed to be the new like crazy good bead hook.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah. And then it turned out that they've made some changes to it and it's better now. But
well, it doesn't break in half when you hook a fish.
First good. Two fish, dude. And one of them was a tank, too. And I'll never forget it, dude. It jumped and cartwheeled out. And I'm like, oh, my God, the hook just pulled. And I bring it up and it's this little stem like this big. I'm like, what the? I've never seen that in my life, dude. Yeah. I told him it must have been 20 pounds.
Guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
And then I saw the second one. It was like 4 pounds, and it broke, too. I was like, this sucks, dude. There went my story.
So you only caught one fish that year, then?
No, not three.
You lost both.
I lost them all.
350 liters.
350
You sold the liters to someone else?
I gave them. I just got those in the mail the other day. I'm pretty excited. I'm ready to get this show.
It means it's almost time.
Get this winter steelhead season kicked off.
Yes, sir.
All you guys out there watching and listening, have you guys been out fishing yet? Have you guys freaking gone out and caught some winter steelhead yet? Maybe some old downriver summers. Some Chinook still floating around.
Some coho still floating around.
Coho, there's some B-run coho showing up in a few rivers. So
yeah, I heard of that. Yeah. Yep. There's definitely a few fish around.
So now let's talk the business end. After you got your leader tied on, what things are you using? What's your preference to leader? After your leader, what do you got next? What do you guys like to use?
I mean, on a day-to-day basis, I mean, I would say it's mostly bobber dogging for me. You know, beads. I fish a ton of beads. And then second, the worm would be my top two. I bet you I fish those two things.
Are you paying attention, Marlon?
Beads and worms?
Yeah.
Beads.
He said worms.
Second
though.
Would be worms.
Yeah.
Second.
Yeah, because he fishes a river with 400 other drift boats floating down. So you got to have something subtle.
Rolling that Christmas tree.
Well, I mean, you know what's weird is on the days that the pressure's the worst.
That's when you get the worms.
The worms.
Well, yeah, because everyone's using beads. Because every mother ever floating down the river using beads. It's just like when we were in Alaska, it's like every dude we float by, it's like, why does every one of these guys have a puffball or a yarny on? It's like, put something else on, dude.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
As we row
yeah.
by.
Yeah.
And yell that for hooking too many, whatever.
Yeah, and that's what happens. Like those people just get so caught up in the trend or whatever's popular that year.
Yeah,
and it's like we talked about it tonight. The fast fishing, you know, has become this like thing. Who race down the river and do four floats in one day, and that blows my mind. Like I am not shuttling my car three or four times in one day. You are out of your mind.
Today I made $10.
$185 in shuttle fees today.
This is great. Oh my God.
Well, I mean, you put like eight people in that drift boat. What are you complaining about?
So do you have a preference? You like soft beads, hard beads?
I'm a soft bead guy, man. I started out bead fishing probably, I don't know, seven, eight years ago, and I only fished hard beads. And like, because there wasn't really a good soft bead out there. There were some like Jensen eggs and like some of the, you know,
Mad River
made the eggs. Uh-huh. And actually, that was the first soft bead I ever caught fish on was one of those, you know, and I fished it just like I'd fish a hard bead, you know, on a low clear day. But as times transitioned and like, figured out how to fish them properly and stuff. I fish probably 90% soft beads.
Bead
now.
Game has gotten out of control.
Oh, like, sick! There's so some many of the stuff like Randy's beads. Doing it lured, like those like incognito beads that are, you know, they're a hard bead with a like
soft
plastic
shell
or soft plastic shell. They fish really good, man. I mean, they still get the effect of a hard bead rolling down the river, but they have a soft feel to them. And
how are they for pegging? Because I've been really I've been seeing them. I want to try them. Like, are they a little easier than the soft beads in general? Or
so I told you about the bead thing I do with my own. Mm-hmm. I put the bead in line. I run them on his because it's pretty tight putting your line through there because there's that, you know, it's got that rubber
coating. Yeah.
And so it kind of squeezes tight on your line. So I don't even peg them. I just put them right down to that bead and. Float,
wait, you know? Really?
Yeah, I'll show you. It's pretty cool. Like,
cool.
And he, actually, Randy is the one. We had this conversation last night, me and him. And he's like, dude, I don't peg any of them. He's like, I don't ever peg them to the line. He's like, I put a bobber stop and then let them slide. And he swears by it. He thinks that it's like.
I think it's kind of natural.
You know.
That's how I used to always fish. I mean, you guys always told me I was wrong.
Yeah. I like that.
See, I peg all mine. So I, except for those. You know,
I mean, when you're dogging, it's pulling it downriver anyways. That bead's going to slide
yeah,
down.
Yeah, I mean, it's
going
to make its way down there at some point. But there are times like you're trying to get it down quick, you know, and you want that. Like, it could take time for that line to all shuffle, straighten out, and fish, you know. So it's it goes both ways, you know. I think there's a scenario for both, and I think if you were dead drifting, you know, pegged and not pegged down the same float, the same steelhead's going to eat either one of them.
Yeah.
In my opinion, but, you know, it's all preference, you know.
Do you fish many jigs?
I do. Low clear water is probably the only time it benefits me where I'm at, you know, and what I'm fishing.
Yeah.
Where I'm at, it's not your typical steelhead water. It's a lot more like Chinook water that we're targeting these steelhead in.
I need to come fish with you. Yeah. You invited me like five times last year, and I never came.
I know. Lonnie made it with me one time.
Lonnie came once. It looked like you guys had a freaking blast.
I think we put 10 in the boat, and I don't even know how many we hooked.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And he was kind of blown away, too, because he got to see, like, what we fished.
He told me. He called me afterwards. He's like, dude, everything we know about steelhead is wrong. What are you talking about? He's like, pop-off fish is that's not even the same, not even remotely close to what we fish.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, dude, I just have to show you.
Yeah.
And he was like going off to me about it.
Well, you know where we fished the other day where you caught that summer first cast?
You showed me.
The backside of that is where I would fish a worm, you know? And like, it's just crazy. Like the stuff, I think that people lose their like track on where steelhead hold. Yes, of course they lay in those flats and tailouts and things like that in that moving water. But dude, there's something about hydraulic water for steelhead. I don't know if it's easier for them to swim in. Dude, just the crazy, if you look at this water and go, what? Well, what are we doing?
The stuff you see on the top is not necessarily what's going on at the bottom.
That's exactly. True, too.
That's the key.
That's what I learned when you guys just do the winter convention when I listened to Cody talk about the water hydraulics and stuff. That was, you learned that a lot. Like,
and I've noticed, like, they I feel like they just kind of get shoved around in there. They don't really have to work to stay in there, you know? Yeah. And so you could fish your worm or your jig or whatever in 4 feet of water in a hole that's 20 feet deep, and you may not get bit right away, but like all of a sudden out of nowhere you're boom boom boom, you know. And it's just because I think those fish are just kind of funneling through the hydraulic in there in that big sweeping hole, and you know it's just a matter of when they come to the level of your presentation, and it's mind-blowing, dude. I got showed by an old timer
so talking about that, let's talk worms. So like when you're fishing, because I know we have our addicted steelhead worms. Yep. We'll put links to those obviously in the description. Yep. And we're working on a few new colors right now, and I need to talk to you about trying to do. I already told you a couple that I'm going to do, but I'd like to add a couple more too based off what you want to do. But regardless, sorry, sidetrack there again. Freaking, what colors, like, are you finding like certain specific colors? Because everyone always gets stuck on, oh, it's a pink worm. And it's like, dude, there's like,
no.
That we learned that there's in Alaska. So it's like, man, you just switch the color out sometimes in a hole. Like, you catch three more fish.
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I have my like starting lineup, you know, that I fish like on a daily basis and like that I'm going to put through a hole first.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like three holes in particular that every single day, I don't care what day it is, there's fish. If there's fish in there, you're going to get one to bite in the first couple casts. And if they're there, you switch your color out after a couple of three, four, five casts and you will catch another one. I mean, it's like, and I kind of proved it to myself like 2 years or whatever it was, 2 years ago, filming with Lunker Junkies, and this all went on to this thing, and we're filming and I could not get a bite like on my normal stuff, and he's like, here, put this on. I'm like, no dude, they won't eat that. And first cast, dude, through the hole, just bam, switched it out again, bam. I'm like, dude, it was just changing and putting something different in front of their face just made them, you know, just trigger. But I mean, I got certain, you know. There's,
so what are your colors?
I'm a big, like, blue head, blue tail. I really like that
blue
one.
Blue head is money.
That blue just head with anything, good. I think, is like, I don't know what it is, if it's the contrast of the colors, you know, but I like the blue head with the pink, the bubble gum, and the white tail.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the standard all pink worm, pink, dude, tail, not, pink, everything.
What a white head. Not even one addicted worm.
I don't even know if I fish actually, a straight you're out. Pink.
No,
out
that's not more. True, because I only got two packages of them, and I've gone through both of them. Because the day that Lonnie came out, we tested them for the first time, and he caught every fish on that day that he caught was on
that. Oh, no, that was Red Haze. I saw that.
Red
picture.
Haze.
Red Haze, that's what it was, yeah. And
Red
and
Pearl's even better.
The Red Pearl, I fished that one a ton.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite worms, actually.
Yeah, so my favorite would be that Captain America from Mad River, which is the blue tail.
Yep.
And then I like ours that we do, which Mad River makes for us, which is, obviously you can't go wrong with Red Pearl, and then Red Haze is just amazing. I know what you're going to say. What's your favorite colors?
Neon yellow.
You're stupid.
No, peachy pearl. I like it.
Addictive.
Just because when I
do, do you run any other colors though too? Or
I do. In fact, no. I was running the haze because the water was clearer. Like, so what my routine is usually like, you know, I'm fishing the smaller prints, but when I bust the worms out, at least the river that I really like to fish, when I'm fishing that high water, it tends to go a little glacial.
Yeah,
it gets a little white, mm-hmm. and it's just like, I don't know what it is, but that orange, yeah. that peachy pearl, and that I've had just.
Have you fished, tried much of the glacier orange color that we make when the water glaciers up like that? It's like a bright orange
with the yellow tails. Yeah. Well, remember any fish last on year? Absolutely. No, yeah. last year that was kind of the fun. Like when we actually got into some good fish.
Yeah.
I was running like, you know, three worms and then seeing which ones would catch it. I mean, I made it a point. I mean, and when we were in the testing phase, like I took all the worms there, and I had that one day I caught a fish on every single color worm in our lineup. And I took a picture of it, single one.
Because there's been some guys from other areas, like on the OP and stuff, that have messaged me and been like, dude, that glacier orange is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the best color.
That was my last day of the season. I only had two of those, and they were ones that Lonnie left with me from that day. I had two of them. And the last day of the season, that was the only thing that I could get bit on. And I only had two worms, and they were shredded.
That's the worst.
I was cutting them down. Like, by the end of the day, I was fishing like a 1-inch worm. Just a jig. It became a jig. Yeah. So that's what I mean. There's a time and a place for every worm, you know, or every color, not just worms, beads, whatever. You know, there's some day that every color is going to produce. But then you have guys like Grant who feel like color matters zero, you know, and
We've all seen it that way, and we've all seen it the other way.
Yeah.
Like I said, we can point back to a trip that we took to the OP where it was nothing but black worms, that was that, and then the red pearl was out doing it about freaking 10 to 1.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, there's...
I mean, I've just had too many scenarios.
But I also think it's not so much the fish, it's the other fishermen. So, like, I'm sure that river, because that was the gig up there, black with a green tail, I'm sure a lot of those fish had come across a lot of black and green tail...
Yep.
Worms, and perhaps maybe when we threw the red pearl into the mix in that gin clear water, it was stupid.
Yeah.
The reactions you're getting on it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you say, just being, you know, being a little bit different, I think that speaks volumes.
Yep.
Especially with the wild seasons, because those fish are sitting in there a long time.
Yeah. And I see that I will say, like, worm fishing, it gets them big wild fish, dude. Uh-huh. It's just it's another level of, like, every time I see the bobber go down in a spot that, you know,
could be
that
a dub.
Yeah, just you're just going.
Dub. I haven't heard Oregon the dub or Washington dub. I have not heard the dub club yet this year.
No, I haven't seen a dub picture yet.
No dubs. It's too early. Oh, I can't wait to start seeing those.
Oh, those are the best, dude. That's a highlight.
I already know, dude. Stone Doll is going to be messaging them to you. Oh, I already know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's unfair because all the little trolls have come out of their grandma's basements and stuff like that, and all the crap talking on Lou, but yet we don't get any dub pictures yet. Damn, it's almost like it's unfair.
It's almost there.
It's coming, though.
It's coming.
Oh, was there any other gear we should talk about before we leave? We've been doing this for about 50 minutes, so hopefully you guys are liking this. Please, please hit that subscribe button if you are liking it. Leave us a review on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. The reviews do help. We like to hear you guys' feedback, and thanks for tuning in, Addicts. It's been a fun night. You guys got any other gear you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Jigs, man. We didn't really talk about jig colors.
I mean,
somebody's got a favorite jig color here.
We better cover a couple jigs here. The ugly jig.
Ugly jig rules.
The ugly jig. So if you guys out there watching don't know what the ugly jig is, it's, I don't even know that you can buy it anywhere.
No, it's just a whitehead, chartreuse, chenille body with a pink tail, and it's already caught. It's caught two of the fish. Two of my winners this year.
I've seen more pictures of that stupid jig in it.
It kind of looks like that, but a little different.
Yeah, for those of you guys who are seeing it, it's an ugly jig. I used to call it a river name killer because that's what I did fish. Like, dude, I only fished that jig. I've caught more fish on that jig than anything else.
Terrible garbage. I refuse to believe it.
But no, I mean that, and then I've done pretty good on just some of the subtle peaches and pinks this season, summers and winters. So,
You know, it was weird last year for jig fishing, year before last, when I fixed a lot of fixed floats for them, dude, they were like low clear water. Like, I would find the brightest thing I could find, you know, to
just
try.
Gaudy.
To, yeah, it was like, I would dig through my box, like, what the hell could I find?
This might just be like a just being different story, but I just remember distinctly the day that I was literally sitting on this rock and I had two steelhead laying out in front of me in this run, and I was bouncing. This was back before tip and bait. I was bouncing reds and oranges and purples and pinks just off off their heads. Just balance. I mean, they're only sitting 3 feet of water. Jim, yeah. Claire can see it. Dink, dink, dink. Sitting there going through my jig while I was beginning, you know, learning steelheader. Just running through the motions. Yeah. You know? Damn, damn, damn.
Try
and
everything.
Like, I had one of those that I just happened to tie up. And I'm like, why not? I put that jig on and I fire it way up the river, you know, so where it's, you know, 50 feet in front of him and it's coming down. And one of those steelhead broke off his buddy and you know, swam good. 20 feet and just whoo, wolfed yep. it. Yep. And I just sat, I hooked him. I couldn't. I was like.
And then he was using old fluoro and broke it off.
No, we were probably, I was probably using just straight 12-pound yep, mono and gin clear water. And, yep. dude, that fish just saw that. And it was it was clear enough to where, like, he definitely saw it coming a long way. And, dude, he broke from that other fish and said, I am killing that sucker. And swam, and I have no idea why to this day. But I saw that. And, of course, being a young angler, it's like the guys who go out and catch their yeah. first fish on nightmare jigs. That's all it. It's going to freaking work. It's a nightmare yeah. jig. So guess what? I probably spent freaking 5 years fishing nothing but that jig, and I yep. caught steelhead freaking
every like day.
Chartreuse one?
Yeah.
So it's funny because I have a story just like that with a nightmare jig. I was fishing a nightmare jig. It was going through. It was right in front of me. I wasn't even like paying attention, and then I just catch something out of my eye, and this steelhead is beelining from the other side of the river to eat this nightmare jig. And I'm like, thinking to myself, how the hell does he even see it? And he is, I'm like, is he coming for this jig? And sure as shit, he's just right for it and just eats it right in front of me. And I'm like, what in the world? That is so badass. And then for months, I fished nightmare jigs.
Probably didn't fish anything else.
It was like nightmares every day, all day.
Yeah, but why? That's what's crazy to me is why do those fish travel? Everybody always goes, can they see your bait? You know, or what's the water clarity? Can they see your presentation from a long ways away? Dude, I've seen that same thing. I've seen one come across the river to eat a bead before. Mm-hmm. You know, coming down, they see it, they target onto it, 15 feet, and grab it. You know, but you know what drives them to do that versus one color versus another? Because you could throw every color under the sun and they won't move. And then there's just that one thing that
whether it's
the light refraction or what.
I think that's what keeps us fishing.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah,
because we've all seen it both ways, where anything works, and then where nothing works but that one.
Yep. And you usually have one of them in your box.
My favorite jig by far, I've caught more steelhead on it than any jig in the world, is white, just white and red. Single beaded rabbit fur, white head with a little red bead and some red rabbit fur.
That's a very good one.
Deadly. Yeah. So deadly.
Black head. Black head rabbit fur with a purple with a little pink tail on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then mine would probably, my top jig.
The Cerise one, I think he calls it. Yeah,
fire.
My top jig is same guy with the peach head. Two red beads and then white and peach feathers.
Mm.
That's a crush and
crush. Are you mostly rabbit fur too?
Yeah, I've become more. Like,
I mean, I have an entire box that's just rabbit fur.
You know, we have some jigs coming out of our own. Yeah. They're going to be sick.
I can't wait.
Rabbit
to talk about them. Yeah. But I can't. We'll probably get in trouble
coming soon.
But we do have some jigs come out. We'll put some links to the descriptions of some of the jigs that we use now. Hopefully you guys like this episode. Make sure, like I said, that you hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, thanks so much for tuning in. And that's it, I think. Yep. We'll see you guys on the river.
Later, guys.